Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, why we need to declutter and why it's so hard to do. We'll hear from Lloyd Alter, Erica Lane, Chumbawamba, and myself. I hope you'll stay tuned. This past week, I've been rounding up and attending to most of my pocket knives. I'm still not sure exactly how many pocket knives I own. 15, or more likely 20. That's quite a hefty number. That's 5 or 6 times as many as I actually need, seeing as I don't live in Arkansas, don't whittle, never need to cut a plug of chawing tobacco, and don't have to trim any animals' hooves. I made a big pile of pocket knives and gave most of them a good oiling and a halfway decent sharpening. In truth, what most of them needed was a good throwing out. No can do, of course, to throw out a conceivably useful tool just because it's useless is beyond my ability. Even a poorly made tool with a blade that wiggles from side to side and cost me maybe $5 20 years ago. Sorting through this big pile of stuff, I realized that I didn't know the basic vocabulary of pocket knives, so I couldn't see what I was looking at. A couple of hours on the internet got me halfway up to speed. So now, when I look at a knife, I can see that the blade is a clip point, or a drop point, or, theoretically, a straight back. I don't actually own any of them. Now that I know the vocabulary, I can tell a spey blade from a sheep's foot, from a Warncliffe blade. I can recognize some standard knife models, too. A trapper, a stockman, a doctor's knife. I even have a doctor's knife, a gift from my grandfather. He was a pharmacist, not a doctor, but close enough. It is a drop-point jackknife with one long, thin blade, polished mirror-bright, and a long, thin spatula. The bottom of the handle is a flat rectangle of brass, good for crushing tablets. This doctor's knife was well made in the USA long ago by the Utica Cutlery Company. The scales on the handle side are fake mother-of-pearl. On one of them is stamped mentholatum. It's a promotional item from a patent medicine company. The practical value to me of a doctor's knife is close to zero. But who could part with such a lovely old relic? Not I. Through working and cleaning and oiling my big pile of pocket knives, I came to appreciate how good my two good knives are. With their silky smooth action, rock-solid lockup, beautiful balance, and good single blade. Each is American-made and 20 years old. A buck and a case. Those are the companies that made them. I could get along fine with just either one of them, plus one or two miniature folders and the medium-sized Swiss Army knife in my bicycle bag. So I could get along fine with 3 folding pocket knives. Add my grandfather's knife for sentimental value. That makes 4 pocket knives I need and 15 clutter. Clutter I can't bring myself to part with. Doctor, I need help, and I'm afraid mentholatum won't do the trick. Then there's books. My wife and I are both avid readers. Books keep joining our household as purchases or Christmas presents. We have long since filled every bookshelf in our house. At the moment, we have maybe 75 more books than we have space for. We should give half of our books away, or throw them away. No, I could no more discard a book than I could discard a child, or a pocket knife. I still regret getting rid of my college geology textbook. Once I wanted to look up something in it and couldn't. I won't go on, but with pocket knives and books, I've just scratched the surface of the clutter in my life. Centuries back, England had her Boxing Day, December 26. Here's what I understand of this foreign holiday. The stores were all closed that day by law. Servants, many of whom had to work on Christmas, had the day off. On Boxing Day, people would box up all sorts of clothing and merchandise they didn't need and give it away to the servants and other poor people. Everybody came out ahead. Now, though, I'm told that on Boxing Day, stores in England are all open and jammed with shoppers seeking post-Christmas price markdowns. The British version of our Black Friday, which now seems to include all Thanksgiving Day as well. Bah, humbug! My favorite anarcho-syndicalist rock band, Chumbawamba, had a nifty song called Buy Nothing Day. Sounds like a tradition worth starting here, or for the Brits, going back to.
I woke up this morning, my temperature high.
Bye, bye, bye.
I'll never buy nothing again, I lied.
Bye, bye, bye.
My doctor, he told me to stay out of town.
Bye, bye, bye.
He said, affluenza will get you down.
Bye, bye, bye.
What did you do in the war, God? What did you do in the war? Ring up the tills in the high street, I'm not coming in anymore.
There's a price tag on me and the sink on the floor. We're buying up anything we can't afford. Wherever I go, I keep hearing this voice saying, choose what you want, but there's so little choice.
What did you do in the war, Dad? What did you do in the war? Ring up the tills in the high street, I'm not coming in anymore.
Behind me and back at the ball. I pawned my affections and still got no love. My heart and my pocket will say it's unfair. I'm unlearning the cost of this laissez-faire.
What did you do in the war, Dad? What did you do in the war? Ring up the tills in the high street, I'm not coming in anymore.
did you do in the water? What did you do in the war? Ring up the tills in the high street. I'm not coming in anymore.
November 23 is Buy Nothing Day.
I came across an interesting blog post about clutter. I'm actually not crazy about the tone of the piece. It's a bit of a self-help pep talk, apparently addressed especially to bourgeois women. And I'm not crazy about the limited perspective here. Only one small bit about global economic implications, and nothing at all is said about ecology or the environment or all the hydrocarbons involved in making, shipping, and then maybe incinerating all that stuff. No, the post is mostly about personal psychology. So I'll be the first to say the perspective is limited. Even so, reading the piece, I found myself saying, yes, she's right, and yes, that's just how I felt. The author is Jessica Lane. Her piece is titled, 9 Hard Truths About Clutter You Need to Hear. I have condensed it slightly for radio. Here goes. Clutter is keeping too many of us from living well. Let's change that. 9 Hard Truths About Clutter You Need to Hear. 1. Nothing you own is ever really gone. It will continue to exist somewhere. I remember searching for a piano on Craigslist. It turns out there are pianos all over the place. Old pianos in people's back rooms, sheds, even their gardens. Discovering this motivates me to be judicious about what I buy. 2. The best way to clear clutter is to reduce what you bring in. Never start a decluttering journey without giving real thought to your consumption habits. Otherwise, you'll find yourself back in the same spot, overcluttered and weighed down. Set a goal to not only get rid of more, but to buy less. 3. Are you shopping to escape your feelings? Most of us have unhealthy ways of hiding from our feelings. We eat, drink, watch TV, or shop so that we don't have to feel our truth in a given moment. We crave the dopamine hit we get from eating something sweet or buying something. Masking our feelings sounds so much more appealing than sitting with them. But real freedom comes when we begin to practice experiencing our humanness rather than running from it. Shop less, allow yourself to feel your feelings, and live with less clutter. 4. There is a dark side to donating. If the above weren't reason enough to limit your consumption, how about this? Here are 2 quotes from recent articles. By one estimate, used clothing is now the United States' #1 export by volume, with the overwhelming majority sent to sub-Saharan Africa. African textile industries are closing their factories and laying people off because they cannot make clothes as cheaply as those American items found in the bend-over markets. Continuing with Erica Lane's 9 Hard Truths You Need to Hear About Clutter, 5. Everything you own is something you have to take care of. A friend recently told me what started her on a path to minimalism. She read a single paragraph where the author said that every decorative item sitting on a table is nothing more than something you have to dust. She realized in that moment that everything you own is something you have to take care of. She cleared off most of the surfaces of her house and instantly felt like she could breathe. 6. Clutter has been linked to depression. women in particular, suffer under the weight of our family's belongings. UCLA researchers found a correlation between high cortisol levels, read stress, in women and a high density of household objects. Clutter accounts for a significant unseen portion of your mental load. 7. The longer you keep something, the more attached you become. One by one, as my sisters and I approached adulthood, our parents gave each of us a cedar hope chest, a place to store sentimental items. I remember my older sister jokingly warning me to be careful about what I put in there, because if it's there long enough, it starts to feel special no matter what it was. It turns out she was right. I now have a stack of random papers and letters from my high school days. They didn't feel particularly significant at the time, but now that I've had them for 15 years, they feel hard to part with. So, consider yourself warned. 8. Eventually, someone will have to decide what to do with every item you own. Whether it's you or one of your loved ones, every non-consumable item will eventually be handled, sorted, and kept, sold, or donated. Everything you buy increases this burden on yourself, and someday the burden on your survivors. Is that what you really want? Less is more. Number 9. Your stuff is getting in the way of the best stuff. The author continues, I find this one the most compelling, and also the most hopeful. Imagine what it would feel like to walk into your home and be greeted by belongings you love, and nothing more. Imagine what you could do differently with your time if you're spending only a fraction of it managing your stuff. Imagine yelling at your kids a lot less because they have half as many toys cluttering up your living space. It feels good to imagine, right? I promise, it feels even better to live it. Okay, thanks to Erica Lane for 9 hard truths about clutter you need to hear. That's from her blog, ericalane.co. That's spelled L-A-Y-N-E, ericalane.co. I am speaking these words at WWUH's East of the River Satellite Studio and Skunk Works, near my desk. The large desktop has maybe 1 square foot of unused space left. Total. Everything else is clutter. It will probably take me at least an hour to clear the desktop down to its essentials, which are 1 laptop computer and a can of ballpoint pens. Clearing off the clutter will take at least an hour, because I will first have to find a place to put each of the 30 or so random objects that shouldn't be on my desk, but are. There's no good place for most of them anywhere else either. This desktop clutter doesn't even include my 20 folding blade pocket knives, most of which are tucked away in the desk drawer. If I were to join the Navy, remind me to stay out of the submarine service. Not nearly enough space on board for my essentials. Maybe the French Foreign Legion would work. The Sahara seems to have plenty of room. Jessica Lane is right. Even if you want to get rid of a lot of your stuff, sorting through it all for disposal is a burden just as big as keeping it all. But let's move from the personal to the public. One of Erica Lane's very good points is that there's no mere technical fix to the problem. We have to change our behavior and our mindset. That's especially true in our public clutter. For example, single-use containers made of recyclable materials is not a good answer to anything. First, there's too much energy needed for the whole process. And second, because many seeming recyclables can't actually be recycled. Replacing disposable styrofoam cups with disposable paper cups is not the answer. We have to change our mindset and our behavior. Here is environmentalist Lloyd Alter in conversation with Alex Wise.
Well, the single biggest problem that we've got is the disposable cup, because the disposable cup is mostly non-recyclable. They're lined with a plastic so they don't get soggy and leak. If the plastic lid is attached to the paper cup, then somebody's got to actually separate them. They can recycle the lid, but not the cup. This uses a lot of energy and a lot of water to make the paper. And the plastic lids are another one of those sources of plastics that are getting into the ocean and are causing all the problems we have. And the liners probably are disintegrating and becoming a microplastic. Fundamentally, plastics are a huge problem in so many ways, from A, the fact that they're made from petrochemicals, and B, that they're all ending up in our babies, in our animals, in our fish, and in our water. So this is the main thing. Now, a lot of companies are trying to figure out this sort of circular economy way. You know, how do we take the cup back? How do we, some are putting chips in the bottom of plastic cups so you can take it and they can recover the cup. And it's all crazy. You know, we perfectly knew how to have a cup of coffee 50 years ago. You went to the coffee shop, you sat down, you drank it out of a China mug. And this is what we have to, I think, we have to change our coffee culture, not just our cup. And we have to stop thinking that we have to walk down the street with a paper cup, but in fact that we should sit down and enjoy it, which is what Schultz, when he founded Starbucks, thought it would be, the third place where you'd go and actually have a cup of coffee.
Wow, that's a radical idea that I hadn't really thought of. I do remember my grandfather around 15 years ago, who was already in his late 80s, remarking at these people who had walked by, some with coffee cups and some with their water bottles. And he was like, when did everybody get so effing thirsty? I just thought that was like, you have to constantly be hydrating while you're walking. But the idea of actually drinking a cup of coffee while you're not on the move is a pretty revolutionary one, I guess.
Well, and the water thing, you know, he was absolutely right. We've been totally sold a bill of good about this constant need to be hydrated and carried bottled water everywhere. And again, for years we've been complaining about bottled water because of the water, and this is so stupid. Water's almost free, and it's perfectly safe, and it's perfectly good in most municipal water systems, probably better than the bottled water. And the point now that I keep stressing over and over again, it's the plastics. It's the single biggest single-use plastic product. And to make that, you've got to have natural gas. And this is, according to the GASC, the producers, 30% of all the oil and natural gas in 15 years, as more people drive electric cars, as much as 30% of all the fossil fuels are going to be going into plastics. And most of those go into single use. So this is what we have to stop with the constant hydration. The disposable bottles have to go, and the disposable cups have to go. And we have to sort of change our culture a little bit to adapt to that, rather than everybody carrying around a mug so that they can walk with a mug instead of a paper cup. Slow down, sit down, smell the coffee, and enjoy it.
Wake up and smell the coffee, indeed, as Dear Abby used to say. Or was it Ann Landers? In any case, it's good advice. And here's some more from Chumbawamba.
Time to wake up. open your eyes, time to wake up. Enough is enough, is enough, is enough. Open your eyes, time to wake up. Enough is enough, is enough, is enough. Enough is enough, is enough, is enough.
Thanks to Sea Change Radio for the interview with Lloyd Alter, and thanks to you for listening to New World Notes. On the web, we are at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. We come to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. On behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, this is Kenneth Doust, urging illegitimi non carborundum, advising maybe you're not crazy, maybe the system is, and hoping you'll tune in again next week. Till then.